no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
The Big Story.
You think because I'm an old man I can't hold my own? Well, I'll show you. Don't hit me there again. No, don't.
Detroit, Michigan. From the pages of the Free Press, the story of a sneaking suspicion that became a dead certainty. Detroit, Michigan. The story as it actually happened. Kenneth McCormick's story as he lived it.
You've seen it before, Ken McCormick, of the Detroit Free Press. In 20 years of reporting, you've seen it lots of times. But somehow, you've never gotten used to the look of murder. Especially violent murder. The shattered glass, the shambles of tables and chairs, the twisted body, always the same. And now, on this Sunday morning in the suburb of Highland Park, as you stand in the living room of a shabby bungalow, now you're seeing it all over again.
What a mess.
Mind showing me your press card?
Oh, here you are. Detroit Free Press. Name is Ken McCormick.
I'm Captain Walsh, Highland Park Detective Bureau.
How do you do?
McCormick, huh? You the guy that got the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago?
Oh, you have a good memory, Captain. What's the dead man's name?
Radway, George F. Radway, age 69, worked in a candy factory.
Looks like he took quite a beating. What did he die of?
Broken ribs, probably punctured his lungs. Death occurred around midnight last night, reported early this morning. Anything else you want to know?
Well, I'd like to get an interview with his family.
Well, you can't. He hasn't got any. One of the neighbors found his body.
I see. What do you think the motive was?
Robbery. What else? Look at the joint.
Someone sure took it apart, but, this bungalow, Captain, the furnishings, the way it's kept, it doesn't look like the old guy had much to be robbed of.
Somebody must have thought he had.
What about all these muddy tracks on the floor?
Who knows? Anyone could have made them. Even Radway himself. I hate this kind of case. You know why?
Why?
Because the motive's too broad, too impersonal. Robbery. Any one of 5,000 bums or hoodlums could have bust in, beaten up the occupant, ransacked the joint, and cleared out. I hate this kind of a
case. Who was the neighbor, Captain? You know, the one who found the body?
Oh, Mrs. Florence Kemper. She and her husband were good friends of Radway. The house is on the next street, back to back with this one. You can see a corner of it through the trees.
Well, I think I'll go over and talk to her.
Well, you're wasting your time. We already got her story.
Well, at least I can get her picture.
Yeah. You know, that's what I envy about you newspaper guys. You take a picture, you write a little copy, and as far as you're concerned, that's the end of it.
I don't know, Captain. Sometimes it's just the beginning.
You wait for Frank Harmon, your photographer, to take his shots of the murder scene. And then the two of you start out for Mrs. Kemper's. You take a shortcut that leads through the back lots from Radway's bungalow. And you've only gone about 50 yards when you see it.
Frank, look over here alongside the path. Now, you see that?
Yeah, I see it. So what?
Now, look at the color. Grayish tan.
What do you expect from a patch of mud? Magenta?
Well, don't you remember those tracks in the bungalow? Unless I'm colorblind, this stuff matches perfectly.
Say. Hey, you're right.
And look there, right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Looks like maybe part of a footprint.
You go on to the neighbor's house. And a few minutes later, you and Frank Harmon are sitting in the neat little kitchen, talking with Mrs. Kemper as she peels potatoes for Sunday dinner. You try not to notice the little tremble in her hands.
You see, my husband and I knew the Radways for years.
Ever since his wife died, George, that's Mr. Radway, took most of his meals with us. Just like one of the family. That's why it was such a shock when...
We understand, Mrs. Kemper.
That's how I came to go over there this morning. Went to call him to breakfast.
Didn't he used to come over of his own accord?
Mostly, yes, Mr. Harmon, but this morning we were up earlier than usual. Mr. Kemper couldn't sleep.
Is your husband around now? Maybe we could talk to him.
No. No, Harold's at the 11 o'clock church service. Besides, he wasn't there with me at the bungalow when I...
Oh, you were alone then?
Yes. Knocked on the back door. Wasn't any answer. Then I looked through the window. Right away, I knew something terrible had happened. I could see the place all topsy-turvy and Mr. Radway lying there. Oh, twisted up.
And then you came back here and you phoned the police?
Mrs. Kemper, would you mind if I took a few pictures of you, you know, just sitting here in your kitchen, sort of?
Why, I guess I wouldn't mind if you need them.
Fine, just hold it like that, peeling the potatoes.
Lawrence, have you got... Who are these men? What are they doing here?
It's all right, Harold.
We're from the Detroit Free Press, Mr. Kemper. We just want to...
I know what you want. Who asked you in here, anyway? You got no regard for people's feelings? Taking pictures, asking questions.
It's all right, Harold. They don't mean any harm.
It's all your fault to begin with. I told you, Florence. I told you we shouldn't have reported it.
But we had to. I found the body.
Someone else would have found it. Someone else could have made the report. But no, you wouldn't listen. Now it's just like I said. Police and reporters swarming all over.
I don't mind so much, Harold. Kind of relieves me to talk to him. Maybe you'd feel better, too.
I don't want to talk to nobody. My best friend just died. I got some feelings. Even if you went.
I only thought...
I'm sorry, Mrs. Kemper.
Yeah, we didn't intend
Please
to...
Please excuse him. He didn't mean it. He doesn't know what he's saying. Too broken up.
Yeah, sure. We understand.
The two of you leave. Frank goes back to the office with his pictures. And as Captain Walsh said, that's the end of it. But somehow, Kenneth McCormick, you don't want to drop this story. Not yet. So just for the record, you decide to check with the rest of Radway's neighbors.
Now, come to think of it, there was someone looked mighty suspicious, a stranger. Hung around the neighborhood all Saturday afternoon.
I should hope to say I did see him. Why, even came here. Pretended he was a window washer. But I knew it was funny. He was wearing a good brown suit.
That's right, a brown suit. Dark hair, medium height, and a pretty heavy build. Was trying to get in that bungalow in the worst way. Come back 3 or 4 times before it was dark.
Thanks, McCormick, but we already know about this window washer. The dragnet's been out for 2 hours
now. You really think he did it, Captain?
I'll bet on it. He's our man, all right, if we can find him. With my luck, that's a question.
The suspect's description is fairly complete. But you wonder if perhaps Mrs. Kemper saw him too and could supply a few more details. So once again, you visit the little frame house. This time, Harold Kemper stays in the room. He doesn't say much until his wife starts to answer your question about the stranger.
Why, no, Mr. McCormick, I don't remember.
Yes. Yes, there was someone... I saw him.
You did, Mr. Kemper?
Yes. It was late Saturday night. I was standing near the back window here, and I happened to look over to George's place. He had the kitchen light on, and I could see this guy on the back porch.
Why, Harold, you never mentioned that to me.
Well, I was too upset, that's all. I didn't think of it.
What did this man look like, Mr. Kemper? Could you see?
Well, he was kind of tall and thin, wearing a lumber jacket.
But the window washer wore a brown suit. He wasn't tall and he wasn't thin.
Why, Harold, that's important. How could you forget a thing like that? You should have told the police first off.
They didn't ask me. Besides, like I said, it slipped my mind.
While the Kempers are talking, you move casually to the back window and look out. And it's just as you thought. Harold Kemper couldn't possibly have seen anyone on Radway's porch because from this window, the bungalow is completely obscured by trees. Then one of those little fateful accidents happens. The pencil you've been holding in your hand drops and rolls under the davenport. You kneel to retrieve it, and there before your eyes is something which, in the breath of an instant, contracts your vague conjectures to a steel-hard core of suspicion.
This is Cy Harris, returning you to your narrator and the big story of Kenneth McCormick, as he lived it and wrote it.
You, Kenneth McCormick, of the Detroit Free Press, are kneeling by the davenport in the Kempers' living room, and a wild surmise is beating inside you. For under that davenport, obviously kicked there in an attempt to conceal them, are several broken clouds of grayish-tan clay. You straighten up with the realization that somehow you've got to get a sample of that clay, a sample you can match with the tracks in the dead man's bungalow. But with the Kempers here in this room, it's out of the question. You'll have to get rid of them, if only for a moment. So you take a long chance. You turn to Harold Kemper, and you begin asking questions about Radway, about the man in the lumber jacket. Question after question, until finally...
Listen, mister, I've told you all I know.
Are you sure, Mr. Kemper? You forgot about the man on the porch until tonight. Now, maybe there's something else
He's
that you...
He's right, Harold. Perhaps...
No. No, there's nothing else. Besides, I can't stand here talking all night. I got work to do. I got to fix the car.
The car? But there's nothing...
It's the gas line. What do you know about them things?
I'm so worried about my husband, Mr. McCormick. He's taken this thing awful bad. Now we have to go to the morgue tomorrow night at 9 o'clock and identify George's body. Harold hasn't seen him dead yet. I don't know what he'll do.
It'll be kind of tough for him, I guess. Mrs. Kemper, could I trouble you for a glass of water?
Why, certainly. That's no trouble. Just sit right there and I'll get it from the kitchen.
You cross quickly to the davenport, reach under, grab some of the clay, drop it in your pocket, and are just getting up when...
Drop your pencil again, mister?
Fix your car already?
I came back for a wrench.
Oh. Well, I'll be leaving now, Mr. Kemper. Tell your wife to never mind about that drink of water. I don't feel thirsty anymore.
You're way out in left field, McCormick. This Kemper was Radway's best friend.
I know that,
All
Captain,
right,
but...
so you found some clay in his house last night. What does that prove?
Look at the samples. Now, here's some from Kemper's. Some from the murder scene and some from the mud patch along the path, and they're all identical. That grayish
you
tan
can't
color
prove
is...
things that way, McCormick.
Oh.
You need a thorough, detailed lab analysis. I'll send the stuff in, but it doesn't make any difference anyway, because even if it is the same... Kemper could have made those tracks at some other time.
Then why did he kick the pieces under his sofa? Why did he try to hide them?
Well, maybe he didn't. Maybe his wife just brushed them out of the way.
Oh, nuts. His wife is as neat as a pin. She'd clean the dirt up. She wouldn't push it under the furniture. And another thing, if Kemper was such a good friend, why wouldn't he have gone to the bungalow and tried to help Radway after his wife came back and told what she'd seen? Unless he already knew the old man was dead.
You can't tell about things like that. Maybe the guy gets sick at the sight of blood. A lot of people do.
Yeah, sure.
Kemper's a respectable citizen. I'm not going to pull him in on your hunch and leave myself open to a charge of false arrest. No, sir.
Oh, well, I just thought you...
We got a lead now. We know the motive was robbery and we know why. There was a rumor all over the neighborhood that Radway kept money in his house. You can bet that window washer heard it, too. As soon as we roust him, the case will be in the bag.
Even to yourself, you have to admit that Kemper would probably not have killed his friend just to rob him. Then your theory gets another body blow. In Radway's house, under an ironing board cover, Walsh's men find $400. That seems to clinch the robbery motive. And then comes the rabbit punch. The same day, Monday, in the late afternoon, the window washer is found. You're there in Walsh's office when they bring him in. His name is John Bruno, and his story is pitifully weak.
You admit you were in the neighborhood. You admit that.
I know, Captain. That's right. I was, but...
And you admit going to Radway's house.
I went to all the houses.
But you went back to that house three times.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh, don't lie. The neighbors saw you. Now, why'd you go back there for, Bruno? Why?
I don't know. I guess because nobody was home the first time, so I don't know.
Now, where'd you go after it got dark? Where were you that night?
At night? Well, I went back to my room, that's all. Back to the rooming house.
Can you prove it? Can you prove you stayed there all night?
I don't know. I didn't see no one. I live alone. You got to take my word, mister. Honest, I didn't go back to the bungalow. I didn't kill no one. Honest, you got to take my word.
You look at that bewildered, frightened man in the brown suit, and you know one thing. John Bruno is innocent. His story is weak. He has no alibi, no witnesses. But how many innocent people do? Then it strikes you, there's one angle you haven't yet tried. Kemper's movements on the night of a crime.
Well, every Saturday, a lot of the men in the neighborhood sneak off to some tavern or other. It's terrible. I wouldn't let my husband do it.
Yeah, it's a beer garden on 6 Mile Road. Kemper and Radway usually went out there together.
Oh, I seen him there last Saturday, all right. Both of them pretty drunk, so I give him a wide berth.
Is that it? Is that the answer? You wish you could be sure. Then you remember something. At 9 o'clock tonight, the Kempers will be at the morgue to identify the body. You check your watch. You can make it. Maybe if you're there when Harold Kemper has to look at his dead friend, maybe you'll see something. You grab a cab, and at 9:01, you walk into the medical examiner's office at the city morgue. Mrs. Kemper's there, but she's alone.
Where's your husband? Where is he, Mrs. Kemper?
He decided not to come in. The last minute, he thought it'd be too much for him. He's waiting for me out on the street corner. Just as well, I guess.
Right, if it's cat and mouse, I can play that game, too. Enjoying the view, Mr. Kemper?
Oh.
Better than the one inside, isn't it?
What do you want, mister?
Well, I just thought I'd tell you how the case is coming. You were his best friend. I figured you'd like to know.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, have they found anything yet?
Oh, they know who the murderer is.
They do?
Yeah, they're just making sure of their evidence. They found a patch of mud in the back lot, you know, with a footprint in it. And now they're checking with the tracks in the bungalow. As soon as the lab tests come through, they'll probably make the arrest.
Well, that don't seem like much to go on.
Oh, they have other evidence, too. Plenty of it.
Well, Mr. McCormick, I see you found my husband, after all.
Yes, we've been having a little talk. How about you, Mrs. Kemper? All finished inside?
Yes. Yes, I made the identification all right. And Harold, you know, I'm sure it won't be long before they catch the man who did it.
Oh, how could you know?
Because I saw something. And I'm sure the police saw it, too.
What do you mean?
Well, on George's throat, there were 3 or 4 fingerprints, just as plain as could be.
And the joke of it, the grim, grim joke of it, is that Mrs. Kemper has made a mistake. What she saw were not fingerprints, which can be traced, but finger marks, which cannot. Only Harold Kemper, in the white heat of his fear, is far beyond figuring that out. His face gives you the answer. Now you know. This man is a murderer. More than that, he's a murderer chased by the phantom of his own fear. He's ripe for the plucking. If you can just get Captain Walsh to stretch out a hand.
But I told you my story, Captain. I told you a million times.
Never mind, Bruno. Tell me again.
What's the use? I'm only going to say the same thing. I didn't do it, so what's the use?
All right, Sergeant. Take him out.
Yes, sir.
What's the matter, Captain? You can't crack him?
No, he'll crack.
When? 6 months from now, out of sheer exhaustion? Look, Bruno was innocent, you know that, and Kemper is guilty. You just won't admit it.
I've got enough complications with that.
I told you what I found out about Kemper. I showed you the motive.
Captain, the lab report is here in those three samples of clay.
Well, what's the gist of it, Sergeant?
They're all identical, sir.
Captain, how much proof do you want?
I don't know.
If you don't want to pull him in, at least go out to his house now and question him. The guy will break. I know he will. He's on the thin edge of nothing.
But it's late. It's after midnight.
What is it you really don't like, Captain? The lateness of the hour or junking your pet theory?
Come on, let's go. Don't pull in the driveway, Sergeant. Just park out front.
Yes, sir.
All right, Sergeant. You wait here. Come on, McCormick. Oh, evening, Mrs. Kemper.
Hello, Captain.
I wonder if I could see your husband for a minute.
I'm sorry. He isn't here. He's gone out.
Do you know when he'll be back?
No, I don't.
Could we come in for a minute?
Yes, of course, Mr. McCormick. Come in.
It's kind of late to go out, isn't it? Do you know where your husband's gone?
He didn't tell me. Is there any message you want to leave?
Mrs. Kemper, you've been crying, haven't you? Is it anything to do with...
No. No, it's just... So what?
You'd better tell us everything, Mrs. Kemper. We'll find out anyway. You see, we know what your husband's done.
Yes. Yes. He did it. He killed George.
How long have you known this?
He just told me about an hour ago. When we came back from the morgue, he was all sick-like. Then finally told me that he and George got into a fight that night over who was to buy more beer. Harold gets into terrible rages, and he beat the old man up. Then when he saw he was dead, he upset everything to make it look like a robbery.
Well, where does he know?
I don't know. He was terribly afraid. He knew you'd be coming after him.
Go on, Mrs. Kemper.
He said they're not going to put me in no prison. Then he rushed out to the garage to get the car.
Well, he won't get far. Where's your phone?
Hey, wait a minute, Captain. The car is here.
What?
I saw it in the garage as we came up the walk.
Sergeant Jansky.
Yes, sir?
Turn your spotlight on that garage, then come with me. We're going in after Kemper.
Wait up, Captain. I want to be on this.
You better stand clear. Come out of that garage, Kemper. You don't stand a chance. All right, we're coming in. Jansky, you go in on the other side of the car. I'll take this side.
Yes, sir.
Kemper?
He's not on this side, Captain.
He's not here either.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Look over there, sir. In that corner, just off the floor.
Harold! Harold, are you there, Harold?
McCormick, don't let her in here.
Mrs. Kemper, don't. Don't go in there. You'll only...
Let me alone. Let me alone. Harold, where are you? Harold, are you...
Now we read you that telegram from Kenneth McCormick of the Detroit Free Press.
Not out of remorse, but out of pure fear, the killer in tonight's big story hanged himself with a piece of clothesline. His wife's story brought the instant release of the window washer and closed the case.
And so ends another big story.
In order to protect the names of people actually involved in tonight's authentic big story, the names of all characters in the dramatization were changed, with the exception of the newspaper reporter. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
In Henry VIII. Pretend you're the girl. You're watching the king. You've heard ugly things of me. You've heard I'm cruel and treacherous and middle-aged. Not much to look at, you see. But in your simplicity, you've seen deeper than all this.
I have.
You've seen that I'm thwarted and unhappy. A great man who can trust no one just because he's great. Who isn't sure he'll ever find out what real love means. Who's always hunting for it, more and more desperately.
Greatness all too often weaves a background of loneliness. Such was the case of this man, Robert Noel, who's acting all England paid homage. Author's Playhouse presents I.A.R. Wiley's poignant story, Command Performance.
Read all about Robert Noel, Piper, mister.
Here, boy.
Thank you, Governor. Piper! Extra, Piper! Read all about Robert Noel,
former actor found dead in apartment. Stage manager Norton blames alcoholism. Robert Noel. Oh, I say that's too bad about him. But he almost made the top, he did. Almost. And now Ben Norton, his enemy, writing the story. Come on, performance. What does he know about it? Norton, a stage manager who couldn't see beyond his own miserable life. And there were others like him. Isabel. Isabel the sharp-tongued. She saw in Noel's perfection, and she hated him for it. Fred, who took her words for truth because he had no head of his own to do his thinking. And Jenny. Jenny, who could have done so much good, who caused so much bad almost without knowing it. Who could have written Noel's life story? Who but Robert himself? This story here in the paper is not the truth. But I was stage doorman of his theater. I remember one night about a year ago when a rehearsal was going on.
I desire you do me right and justice.
For heaven's sake, show some proper feeling, girl. In this play, I'm supposed to be the King of England. I'm about to rid myself of a worthy, though tiresome wife, and take a new one. But I've still got my eyes in my head. You're a pretty piece. Anne Boleyn isn't going to last forever. And you know it. You might be the next in line. We'll show you know it. Don't just read lines. Live your part.
Hold on. Give her a chance. She's a new one, Noel.
New or not, Norton, this has got to be right. You're a stage manager. You know that.
I think I understand, sir. I'll try again.
And you, Isabel, you ought to break for a moment. Inwardly, you're supposed to feel what's going to happen. And where the places is, Fred?
Here I am.
Just remember, Fred, you're supposed to be a great cardinal. Don't behave like a tuppenny halfpenny office boy. You'll take our lives again. Make it good this time. All right, everyone. Places.
Sir, I desire you to...
Come in. Hey, Joe, give a man a chance. Oh, hello, Inspector.
Hello. It's a wonder you recognize me in all this air fog. It's thick enough to cut into pieces, it is.
It's a brave man. You ought to be out in a night like this. Come in.
Tis a night for ghosts.
To tell the truth, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a ghost or two around this way.
The actor's still at it, eh?
You can't keep acting folk out of the theater, no matter what.
Yeah, this old place has seen a lot of them. Henry Irving, Nell and Terry.
Well, dead or alive, I'll bet they'd be poking around somewhere on a spooky night like this here.
How's the play going?
When His Majesty Noel begins his hollering, it's a good sign.
Well, you'll be having another of these first night beanos afore long, and me traffic will be all tied up in knots again. Sometimes I wish they'd put me back in a nice, quiet suburb.
Not you, Inspector. I'll get your pass to the play one of your off nights. And I'll wager it'll be just like it used to be. I saw Billbone Tree. And this here Robert Noel walks right alongside of him.
Aye, so I'll be seeing Henry the Eighth. He with the eight wives. Heaven help him. I've got one. Yes. This here Robert Noel. He isn't any, is he?
No, and it's sad too. Noel lives in a lonely world, Inspector.
From what they tell me, he's made it lonely for himself.
Yes, you'll hear that talk. Take my word for it, it's not true. There's a heart of gold in Robert Noel, but very few have ever given him reason to show it. Most of them around here hate him for his success.
Say, maybe this play will be the one to make the command performance for Noel.
It might indeed, Inspector. It might indeed.
Well, see you soon. Keep your door locked. Can't tell who can walk in.
Don't worry about me, Inspector. I can handle myself.
I beg your pardon.
Blame me. You scared the living daylights out of me, miss.
I'm sorry if I startled you, but is rehearsal over? Do you know if Mr. Noel is disengaged yet?
He's busy. Mr. Noel is just cutting off his wife's head. You know him personally?
Only to look at him. But I've got to see him. I'll wait.
I wouldn't. Once Mr. Noel starts cutting off heads, he never knows where to stop. He cut off your head as soon as look at you. Especially if you haven't got an appointment, and I'll wager you haven't.
But you don't understand.
I understand, all right. I haven't been on this stage door for nigh on 20 years for nothing. You want to be an actress, don't you?
Yes.
And you think if only Mr. Noel would hear you recite The Wreck of the Hesperus, he'd make you his leading lady.
I don't know The Wreck of the Hesperus.
Well, whatever it is, he won't listen to you. And if he did, it wouldn't help. You're a pretty young thing, but you can't act.
That isn't true. How do you know what I can do?
Because if you were a real actress, you'd have got yourself inside that theater no matter what anyone said or did.
Fair means or foul, as the saying goes. Now, you run off home and be a good girl and get married and settle down.
But I don't...
Come on, now. That's a good girl. Out you go.
Oh, but...
Out you go. Watch your step, miss. Why don't you try catching him as he leaves the theater? Well, through for the day, ladies and gentlemen.
Wasn't soon enough for me.
Cool off, Fred, my lad.
Isabel, I'll wager you 10 to 1 that before the next year's out, that rotter will be Sir Robert Knoll. And then we'll have him at the top of the profession.
I'll give you boys another 10 to 1 wager. By hook or crook, Sir Beerbohm will be moved out of his niche there on the wall. And we'll have our Sir Robert bigger and better hanging in his place.
The venom clamors of a jealous woman poisons more deadly than a mad dog's tooth. Shakespeare, my dear. Comedy of errors.
Inferring that I'm jealous, Popjoy? Did you by any chance notice that he looked up at the royal box? He was seeing things, my dears. A command performance. And then birthday honors. Just as you say, Freddy, we'll have to say Sir Robert every time we look at him. Sir Robert, indeed.
The rotter.
But such a clever rotter. Did you notice that new bit of byplay with the girl's hand? It's just a touch, but it's good. And before he's done with it, he'll have everyone believing it's great.
I'll tell you a story. A good story. I got it from Norton, who is usually a tight-mouthed customer. You know the yarn about his being the son of a naval sea captain and away from sea to become an actor, being cut off at the paternal shilling and all that?
Come on, where's the joke?
The truth, my dear Isabel, is that his father was a clown in a circus. And our Robert began life as a baby clown. Yes, really. Yes. Used to do conjuring tricks and turn handsprings. Choo-choo, they build him.
Choo-choo?
Why you two begrudge him his limelight, I don't know. Anyway, I'd keep it to myself, folks.
Don't worry. We know when to keep our mouths shut, old boy.
Noel has the vanity of a peacock. It's sort of pathetic in a way. The greatest living actor on the English stage, and not one woman to love him. You know, that's one of the things he's looking for in this life. A woman to love him.
It can't be done, no matter how hard he's tried.
You're right, it can't. I'm a woman, and I'm telling you.
Telling them what, Miss Keene?
Oh, nothing, sir. I was just...
Never mind. You're not on stage. You needn't answer me. Lovejoy, is my car out front?
I'm afraid you've got to walk it, sir. Your chauffeur telephoned. He said the fog was so bad he couldn't even see his headlights.
I prefer to walk tonight, and I can see my way in the dark like a cat.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
Good night, Popjoy.
Oh, I...
Steady the boss, it's all right.
I'm sorry. You can't see a thing in this fog.
Let me help you. Where were you going? Or trying to go?
Nowhere. I was just standing still, waiting.
For what? A bus? That would have been like waiting for a miracle.
Yes, it was like waiting for a miracle.
You must have been coming from somewhere.
I was coming from the theater.
The Imperial?
Yes.
Ah, so you're an actress.
Oh, no. Just trying. The old man at the stage door said I couldn't be.
Why not? You have a pretty voice.
And I am pretty. That isn't conceit. One must know a thing like that. But I guess being pretty isn't enough, is it?
It's a great deal.
I tried to see Robert Knoll. I thought he'd help me.
Do you know him, then?
Yes, but he doesn't know me. I've been to every play he's acted in. I mean, since I've been grown up. Lots of times I've even gone without food to see him.
That's the sort of thing one does for friends. You ought to know that he has a friend like that.
He must have so many. He's such a great man.
Greatness doesn't bring one friends. Why should you think he'd help you?
Because he must have had a hard time, too. Oh, he would understand. I feel it. He's kind and generous.
That's not what they say of him.
I don't care what people say. They're jealous. I know him better. You see, I've watched him. And if you go without things for someone, you sort of see deep into them. You... Well, you get to love them. That sounds all silly. Like a stage-struck schoolgirl raving about her matinee hero. But I don't care.
You mean you do? Might I see you safe home, miss?
You can't. I haven't got a home.
That's silly. One has to have a roof over one's head. It's a must.
Not if you can't pay the rent. Mrs. Stokes said I'd have to pay or stay out. And I owe an awful lot. Oh, I'm a stupid dreamer, I guess. So I spent my last penny on a bus fare. On my last hope. Isn't that funny?
What's your name?
Jenny. Jenny Rawlings.
Jenny Rawlings. That's pretty. It'll look well in the theater lights.
It never will.
You can't be sure. Wonderful things can happen, especially in fogs.
Not to me, they can't.
Suppose you took a chance. Suppose you trusted a perfect stranger, Miss Rawlings.
Oh, I'm sorry. You must have misunderstood me. I wasn't begging, don't you see? It was the fog. And look, it's even lifting now. It was like talking to myself. Why, I said things I wouldn't have said to anyone. I didn't mean to pour out my heart to you.
Not even to Robert Noel?
Least of all to him. I could never say, Mr. Noel, you're great and good, and I love you.
Now you're making fun of me.
No, I'm not.
What's the matter, Jenny?
I can see now. You're...
Yes. Wonderful things do happen in fogs, as I said. Even to a little Miss Jenny. Are you hungry, Jenny?
Don't make it smell too good. I couldn't wait.
What would you say to souffle? It's my specialty.
Wonderful.
Cocktail?
Well, I... No.
Great. I don't touch the stuff. Perhaps I'm afraid of it.
Afraid?
You know, they say all actors are crazy on some accounts. My father drank himself to death. He was a clown. He didn't want to be. He wanted to play Hamlet. All clowns do. So it broke his heart.
I'm sorry.
I was his last hope. But at my command performance, well, I'll imagine him standing in the wings, saying, well done, Robbie. Well done.
Will there be a command performance?
There has to be. You know, Jenny, I've never told anyone all that before. It must have been a magical sort of fog.
You're magical. Why are you so kind to me?
One good turn deserves another. You were kind to me.
I was. Could I be kind to you?
I hope so.
I mean, well, I'm nobody. What could I do?
To begin with, you could eat my souffle before it falls flat. It's not used to being kept waiting. And don't talk. Then we'll have pêche flambée à la Noël and real coffee. I'll wait till your landlady doesn't make real coffee.
Bai says she doesn't make coffee of any sort.
Who's Bai?
Just one of the boarders. A young American. He dances at the Palladium. By heck, the hoofer, they bill him.
To be frank, I don't like young Americans. But I can't dance much, but I can do other things.
You're nice.
I've just remembered. There's a part in Henry VIII. It's something just created. It's a girl's part. She's one of the Queen's retinue. A simple, lovely girl. Stand up a moment, Jenny. Pretend you're the girl. Now, you're watching him in the great scene where Catherine pleads with the king. You've heard ugly things of me. You've heard I'm cruel and treacherous and middle-aged. Not much to look at, you see. But in your simplicity, you've seen deeper than all this.
I have.
You've seen that I'm thwarted and unhappy. A great man who can trust no one just because he's great. Who isn't sure he'll ever find out what real love means. But who's always hunting for it, more and more desperately. And suddenly it's as though I feel your understanding, your pity. I stop beside you and hand idly as I might pick up a trinket. and taking your hand is important, because there our eyes meet.
Yes.
And in mine you see your future. That one day it'll be your turn with me. That I shall pour jewels and power into your little hands. And I shall be wondering if one day I shall corrupt you like the rest with my gifts. And if you will fail me, too.
Don't I say anything? Mr. Noel, don't I say anything?
No. You just acted.
Oh, Mr. Noel, how can I ever thank you?
Don't cry, my dear. It's a bit of a miracle for me, too, finding you out there in the dark. I'll tell you about it someday. But now, my dear, I just want to make you laugh and then...
Yes?
Send you home with a week's salary in advance.
Take your time with breakfast, dearies. Too much stuffing's not good for your figures.
Taking inventory, Mrs. Stokes. So early in the morning, too.
Mind your manners. Anyone seen Jenny?
I'll fetch her, Miss Stokes.
Do that, bye. Her breakfast is getting cold.
Okay.
Come in. Hello, bye.
Jenny Rawlings. If I didn't know you for a God-fearing citizen, I'd say you'd been drinking.
I have been drinking. Only this time it was nectar.
Come out of it, Jenny. Come clean. You've been up to something. I missed you last night at supper. Where, for Pete's sake, have you been?
On the streets. Homeless, starving waif looking for a job. For the last time.
You little idiot. If you were broke, why didn't you tell me? Aren't we friends? Aren't we something more? Aren't we?
Darling, please, I wasn't broke. Not quite. But I had to make my own way on my own two feet.
But you can't, Jenny. You weren't made for it. You're something someone should take care of. Me, for instance. All this bunk about acting. You're no actress. You never will be.
That's what the stage door man told me. He said, if you could act, you'd act. So I went right out into the fog and acted. I acted the part of a poor little lost girl who runs into the great, kind actor. Quite by accident. The fog is so thick she doesn't recognize him. So she's able to tell him how wonderful he is. It was a magnificent job. He fell for it, darling. He fell flat.
You little devil, what a dirty trick.
Was it? But that's what the stage man told me. Fair means a foul. Perhaps it was a bit foul. But it didn't do any harm, did it?
No, he's probably just head over heels in love with you. And he sounds like a pretty square guy to me.
Oh, bye. He'd never fall in love with me. Why, he's old enough to be my father.
Is he? Now, you listen to me. You're going to marry me, Jenny.
Oh, stop. You're hurting my arm.
I love you, Jenny. Just give me a year on Broadway, sweetheart, and I'll settle down on a farm with cows and kids.
You never would, bye. I don't know much about American hoofers, but I'll wager they dance at their own funeral. Come on, fetch me down to breakfast.
Everyone on stage, be quiet, please. I've an announcement to make. This is Miss Rawlings, Miss Jenny Rawlings. She's joined our company.
He's fallen, Fred. See the way he looks at her? He thinks he's found the love of his life. That and a command performance would make everything perfect.
Good looker. Probably can't act at tuppence. What a ride she's taking him for.
Perhaps to the church door, darling.
Oh, don't be silly. She's in her 20s. He's in his 40s. And no glamour boy at that. There's something our Robbie can't get away with.
Our little scene went over big, darling. You could hear a pin drop.
I was so excited. I guess I'll never get used to a big audience.
You won't have to worry about that anymore, Jenny. Remember what we talked over last night?
Oh, that.
Yes, my dear Jenny. I want the world to know.
The world?
Yes, right now. Popjoy, Isabel, Fred, come here.
Robert, if we make a scene of it, that can wait until later. When the season's over and we're established, you with your command performance, perhaps, and I as leading lady.
Nonsense. It's too good to wait.
What's all this whispering about?
We just wanted you to know that in a few days, my Jenny will be Mrs. Robert Knoll.
Congratulations. Take your curtain calls, Robert. I'll run along now and see you tonight.
All right, dear. But that was my last call. Well, we're through for the night, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow at 9.
Sorry to bother you, sir, but I almost forgot. This special message came for you.
Thank you, Popjoy. Give it here.
Yes, sir.
Listen to this. We have just had a message from the Lord Chamberlain. Their Majesties will be present tomorrow night at a command performance.
Who is it?
It's me. Bye.
Just a moment, please.
I came in to congratulate you. I read about tonight's command performance in the papers. You're in the cast, aren't you? What's the matter, Jenny? You're all...
Oh, Bye, what's the use of fooling myself? Bye, I can't act, and everyone knows it. He knows it, too. Oh, Bye, I've overplayed my act. I've made such a mess of things for him. For me. Bye, marry me.
Aren't you getting your love life a little mixed?
But Robert means nothing to me. He was just a means of getting somewhere. And now that I've reached there, I don't want it. I'll even quit right now. What's the matter? Don't you love me?
Of course, but isn't that playing a mean trick on him? That command performance, it must mean everything to Noel. He's counting on you.
But, well, then I won't let on tonight, Bye. Afterwards, let's not talk about it anymore. Come on. I've got the afternoon. You can buy me a ring. That's what you can do.
Here, the first act went over jolly well, Norton.
I say, what's holding up the curtain for the next act? Why isn't Noel on stage for his cue?
But I'm going to find out right now. Stand by, will you, Freddy?
Righto. But on the double, you know.
Noel. Are you there, Noel? Noel. Whatever.
And Jenny. What's wrong with you two? You've been due on stage for the last 3 minutes, Noel.
Jenny. Jenny. How could you do this? How could you?
Oh, Robert. I'm terribly sorry it had to be this way.
Jenny, tell me. Was it a game all along?
At first, Robert. But it got beyond me. I never meant to hurt you.
What is all this? Robert, you're on.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Jenny.
Robert, you can't run out. It's the command performance.
Oh, Mr. Norton, I'm so sorry.
Oh, what's happened, Jenny? What have you done to him?
When he came in here and took my hand, I had forgotten to take off my wedding ring. I was married to someone else this afternoon.
You have heard I.A.R. Wiley's story, Command Performance, directed by Homer Heck. William Everett was heard as Robert Knoll, Lorette Philbrant as Jenny. The musical score was conducted by Joseph Colicchio. Next week, same time, same station, Authors Playhouse will bring you Joseph Harrington's absorbing story of a woman's untold testimony at a murder trial. The Silent Witness. This is the National Broadcasting Company.